still really active in post-COVID. And definitely there's a lot of information on our website about each of those two things. I'm also associated with a group called Learning Inside Out Network, which is LION, which is a collective of folks who are, folks who are formerly incarcerated, folks who are educators, folks who are interested artists in the community, coming together to create a lot of different types of interactive engagements for folks who are in community inside those spaces and outside. So that's LION, Learning Inside Out Network. That's another great one to check out.
Great. Those are awesome projects. And thanks so much for sharing. You've been listening to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Special thanks to our guest and Prison Pipeline Collective member, Karen James, for production. Free them all.
Listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor the Portland Folk Music Society concert series starting Saturday, September 17th with singer-songwriter Tim Grimm. The Folk Music series of 9 Saturday concerts starts September 17th and continues through May of 2023 at the Reedwood Friends Church on Southeast Steele. Season tickets are now available. Ticket information can be found at kboo.fm under Community Events.
Every single person since SB8 has been a law has needed to travel out of state. Every single person that's reached our line.
We've been clinging on to Roe versus Wade and the protection that it offered. And it feels as though that protection is being taken away from us. So it feels as though this is a moment of survival. And I think any moments of survival can be very scary.
What did abortion access look like in America when Roe was the law of the land? Tune into KBOO's Roe on the Rocks, a limited series podcast where I investigate this question as I take you through the months leading up to the U.S. Supreme Court decision that effectively overturned Roe. That's Roe on the Rocks, airing Thursdays at 9 a.m. You don't want to miss it.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting...
Yo, check this out. Hard Knock Radio coming at you, bringing the noise. This is Chuck D, Public Enemy number one, news, views, and hip-hop.
This is Sister Soulja on Hard Knock Radio. Listen closely.
¿Qué pasa, raza? This is Deuce Eclipse, the Oi Joaquin, your parte chino. Check it out. Listening to Hard Knock Radio.
Hey, this is Patrice Rushen, and whenever I'm in the Bay Area and I need good information and great radio, it's all about Hard Knock Radio.
And again, you're tuned to Hard Knock here on the Pacifica Network. The Moon Within is a coming-of-age story told in verse that explores the themes of first love, first periods, and gender identity. Ida Salazar wrote Moon Within to provide her daughter and her daughter's generation with a more empowering narrative around menstruation. And she joins us today to talk a bit about it. Ida, welcome to Hard Knock.
Hey, hi. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Now, the story centers around Celie Rivera, an 11-year-old girl growing up in Oakland who's mortified that her mother wants to celebrate her first period with a moon ceremony. What is a moon ceremony?
A moon ceremony, as defined by me and my traditions, is a Mexica ritual that is practiced during a girl's coming of age. Mm-hmm.
And Celie is resistant to her mother's desire to have the moon ceremony, like most young girls. I remember, you know, being mortified and not really wanting to have the conversation with my mother. So this is typical for most young girls. She is not really welcoming the idea of celebrating it in this way. Talk a bit about Celie's hesitation.
Well, Celie is a secret keeper, and like many tweens, does not think that any of her personal business is anybody's business. And so she, I think, is part of a culture that has not been able to confront our the functions of our body and our the happenings of our body in a kind of uncensored and liberated way.
Mm-hmm. How I'm like, do we give this away or do we not give this away? But how was Celie's mother able to inspire her daughter to see this journey, this rites of passage, quite differently than she initially had?
So Celie's mother, Mima, is part of a movement of women who are trying to kind of regain some of these traditions that have been stolen and lost during colonization. And so in their kind of constituting and reclaiming their traditions, she is kind of a little bit heavy-handed with Celie and kind of insists and puts it in her face in many different ways that her body is to be celebrated, her transitions and her growth and her personal development is something that is sacred and beautiful and is connected directly to the moon, because menstruators menstruate in the 28-day cycle, and she wants Celie to be able to know that is a direct correlation with the way that the moon comes every 29 days.
Mm-hmm. And this is not only a story about transition for Celie, but also for her best friend Magda. Did I say the name correctly?
Magda, yeah. Magda Marco.
Okay, Magda. Also going through a change, asking Celie to use he, his pronouns and call him Marco as he embraces his transition. You simply could have included only the story of the young girl in Oakland going through the change, beginning her period, void of another layered character such as Magda. Why was it important for you to include this narrative as well, especially when we think about the conversation, the thoughts around transition?
That's a great question. I was really intentional about it because I wanted Marco's blossoming to mirror Sally's blossoming, and that when we come of age, we come of age in different ways. I wanted Sally to be to teach other children, other readers, I wanted Sally to teach readers that we can be good allies to people who are blossoming into their gender identity in a beautiful way, just like we need to be good allies when menstruators are blossoming at this particular moment during tweenhood.
You know, just listening to you and the use of language, you know, when we think about this conversation of menstruation, it's really cloaked in this idea of patriarchy. That's the nature of it. And the thought and idea is that only women are the ones who menstruate. Maybe if you can explore that subject for a bit and why you're so deliberate in your language.
Mm-hmm. I think that it's critical for us to begin to open up the definition of what a menstruating body does, we understand as gender. I'm still learning. I'm still learning, and I'm still trying to kind of understand how all of it works. But my intention is to be a good ally, and in order to be a good ally, then I am embracing words that are more inclusive. And I think that when we look at all of the people who menstruate, there are people who don't menstruate because they've transitioned and the hormones have stopped them from menstruating. There are people who never menstruated and are still women. And so all of this is a relationship to menstruation, whether, you know, and it's an evolving relationship to menstruation. And so I think that as we broaden our understanding of gender identity, we also have to broaden our understanding and inclusivity of this word menstruation. I think it's a loving act in the end.
I agree with you, but I think you're also requesting or requiring a lot of listeners or individuals, especially when we think about race in the society. Race mm-hmm. also is a social construct. Same with gender. How do we get people to exist in a space? Is it just a matter of time? As a writer, describe the process for you, understanding that you're writing to a particular demographic age group. Do you see them being more open to the idea and concept of gender identity, say, versus your peers?
Absolutely.
And was the writing process easier because of that?
Absolutely. You know, the character of Marco came from somebody in my community, in the Bomba community. And there's this moment in the book where Marco is in the girls' bathrooms before they transition, and another child questions their right to be in the girls' bathroom with the rest of the girls, and because they're presenting more masculine, and so and the mother Mima defends Marco at the time, Magda, and says, you know, Magda loves herself more than any one of us, and because of that, she gets to be whoever she wants. And I think that, especially in the Bay Area, and that actually happened, and I witnessed that, and I was that mother who defended the right of this child to be and express their gender in whatever way they wanted. And that was my inspiration. And I think that kids right now are liberating themselves from the idea of gender as just a binary, and they're challenging us. And so in many ways I was responding to that challenge and saying yes. And what was the most kind of miraculous or incredible thing that I discovered was that when I looked at ancestral philosophy in Mexica or Nahuatl peoples, I found that gender was not something that as we see it now, was so much more fluid. If you look at Ometeotl, Ometeotl is the creator spirit. Ometeotl is neither male or female. They're both. Divine duality. And many of the priests were what's called a Xochiwa. A Xochiwa is somebody who bears flowers. And the flower for the Mexica was also a symbol of poetry. And so the Xochiwa are somebody who is one who bears poetry. And so it was miraculous and fantastic to discover this, but also politically really important for us to, in the reclamation of these ideas of a moon ceremony for menstruators, I was also trying to reclaim this idea that gender is wider and is more expansive than what we are allowing, and that if in our history people had it right before colonization.
Considering history and all of what you just said, also included in the book The Moon Within is the Mayan poem A Flower Song for Maidens Coming of Age, written in 1440, and describes a moon ceremony. Why was it important for you to include this, and what was it about it in particular that resonated for you?
Well, that poem was handed to me by David Bowles, a translator of that poem in his collection of Nahuatl poetry translation. And when he gave me that poem, I cried for a week. I could not believe that this was the only existing document in the Americas that predates colonization to demonstrate the moon ceremony. In it, you see a young girl going out into the middle of the forest by the light of the moon, and older women initiating and showing what it is to be a woman. And it's a fantastic piece of history, but it had been in obscurity. Very few people knew about it. So it was important to me to take it out of obscurity, just like I was pulling our moon ceremony practices out of obscurity and out of the oral tradition, which is a powerful way to retain story on its own, but I wanted to also pull this piece of literature and as the concept of a Xochiwa and Ometeotl into the present.
I can't emphasize enough to the listening community of Hard Knock how much this book is more than a conversation about a young girl moving into a rites of passage or transition for her, or the story of her best friend who also is transitioning. For me, this is about reclaiming history and tradition in the face of colonization. Listening to you and then reading the book and then having my own questions around being an administrator, right? Or mm-hmm. being someone who has a monthly period, this cycle, that there's so much power in that. Being able to bring life, right? Being able to exist in a power that through colonization and patriarchy, women are told to do the exact opposite, that we're weak. That we are weak and we should exist in some constant shame because of our ability. Maybe if you can talk or speak directly to that.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to reclaim not only our ancestry and our traditions, but I wanted to reframe the conversation around menstruation, that patriarchy and puritanical views that came with religions and colonization had devastated. It is through patriarchy, puritanical views, and colonization that we have lost many of our traditions. But more than anything, we've lost the relationship that it's a powerful thing to menstruate. And patriarchy robbed us of that and gave us a narrative that said that our menstruations are dirty, to be feared, to be ignored or silenced and or ashamed of. And so I wanted this book to be not only a book that kids would and readers would really gravitate to because they're curious about their lives and their changing lives at the moment, but one where they would understand the deeper the deeper significance of what it means to reclaim that power. It really is an act of resistance to be able to speak about your period without shame, to know that you menstruate for 7 days without and lose a blood and you don't die, and that in that same process is what brought every single human being into this world. Every person came from a menstruator, and yet it has been silenced for years and relegated to shame and secrecy.
Why does that fear exist for men in the society when we think about patriarchy? Why does that fear exist? The fear of women existing in their own promise and power. Why is that so? I mean, it's a given, but I would love to hear you say explain why do you think that is.
Mm-hmm. When we menstruate, there's a certain the fear, I think, comes from an idea that we will overtake our power. Power will be more powerful than that, and that's a scary thing when you are in power, to have your strength challenged and or weakened. And that's such a great question. You're asking me such fantastic questions. Let me see. I think the fear comes from the challenge that our power would overpower those that don't menstruate. Somehow it has been translated. The narrative has surfaced to the point where we don't even want to talk about it. If you look at Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, which was written in 1971. This is the first time that the topic of menstruation was ever broached in middle grade fiction. And my book is only the second one in all that time. That's nearly 50 years. And so I think that speaks to this foreignness, this othering of the menstruating body that people can't face because they're scared that somehow this power and this beauty and this magnificence is going to take away what they have.
I think the fact that this internalized oppression that we as women impose, self-impose, is really eye-opening.
Sure is.
And I think it's this direct cause and effect when we think about this particular kind of trauma that is reoccurring, because I say reoccurring, and it could be seen also as a cumulative trauma because it happens monthly, right? For some, but not for everyone. But definitely for some. Go ahead.
No, absolutely. I think that there's layered traumas around it. Colonization, of course, and then patriarchy, and then the church and puritanical views. Those layered oppressions have silenced us, and we've internalized it. And on top of that, you know, there hasn't been any conversation around people who menstruate and how painful it is. Some with like endometriosis or multiple cysts and whatnot. You know, there are all sorts of conditions that afflict menstruators that we can't even talk about.
The I mean, when we think about racism, right?
Yeah.
When we think, it's like the thought of you know, I think I always say that control is an addiction, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when we think about racism, I think it's connected to, or privilege, I should say rather, it's connected to someone's addiction to that type of power.
Absolutely.
And control.
Yeah.
So, you know, I understand, but I mean, I think it's also important to call it out. So that's why I asked the question. Something else too, you know, you've been quoted in saying that you wanted a better for your daughter's generation, or you wanted better for your daughter's generation. So you wrote The Moon Within. First, what is the better? Please share that process or that thought with us.
The better for me would be a place where the body is seen not as where the body is seen not as oppressed, where we are liberated from these ideas of negativity and shame, where we can stand in our power and love all the parts of our body and all of the functionings of our body and explore what it means to be in relationship to the moon. All of these things are not what my generation and previous generations have known. And coming from a Mexican upbringing that was very rooted in Catholicism, that really just damagingly oppressed any sort of pleasure, any sort of exploration of yourself or your body or in play with your body, all of that has to be undone. And I wanted my daughter and her generation to not have those oppressive factors when they were coming of age, as they're coming of age.
You mentioned that you didn't have this for your generation, and the generation before you didn't have it as well. So I'm assuming that you didn't participate in your own moon ceremony. I know you have a daughter. Did you create this magnificent celebration of her womanness? Did you participate in that? And then I'm making the assumption that you didn't, but did you also, were you able to have your own moon ceremony or?
No, I of course not. I grew up in a very strict Catholic home that had completely lost all sense of any kind of indigenous practices. Although we are detribalized indigenous people, my daughter, I created a beautiful moon ceremony for my daughter. And unlike the character in the book, my daughter wanted a moon ceremony because she had been raised in, as I had been actually discovering myself and in community and sitting in circle with other women about what it is to kind of honor and understand our relationship to the moon. And so she had been raised in this tradition. And so when it came time to start her moon ceremony, she was really excited about it because she knew how beautiful it felt and how awesome it felt to be in circle and to kind of create sacred space for this incredible transition.
Who are you hoping? Who is the intended audience? What are your hopes for individuals who will read The Moon Within?
I want this book to resonate with Latinx children. I want this book to resonate with gender expansive children, with all menstruators, with boys and non menstruators, with mothers and daughters and fathers and daughters. I want this to go beyond, you know, a simple little tale about a little girl in Oakland getting her first period. I want people to understand that this is part of a larger radical act of love for menstruators, for future generations, and for humanity.
You said a lot throughout the conversation, and when I think about the stigma associated with, you know, menstrual cycles, women being on their period, the language that is connected to that, to me, it feels like it's another form of gender injustice. How can we as women begin to combat the narrative that suggests that women are unclean and undesirable while on their cycle?
There's an interesting hashtag on Instagram or anywhere you can find. It's just hashtag menstruation, and you'll see how incredible women and menstruators are taking back that that fear and that loathing that people have that narrative that people have given us by demonstrating what it is to bleed and making fun of it and celebrating it in different kinds of rituals and actually showing blood. And there are certain artists who are creating artwork with their menstrual blood. Some are just are being very educated. Some are being people are being enlightening and very didactic about it. This is the way your body works. This is what the inside of a uterus that is bleeding looks like. And so there's a lot of movement, I think, that is happening across the country to combat that. My book included period, end of sentence, the documentary that won the Oscar recently, also is part of this kind of zeitgeist that is understanding that we're not going to let the narrative, the dominant narrative that we're our menstruations are the curse or to be feared or loathed, to continue. We're going to stop it by reframing the narrative, by challenging it, and by turning it and celebrating it.
What kind of pushback have you received as an author, as a mother, as a woman? What kind of pushback have you received being so vocal and deliberate in contesting and wanting to dismantle a narrative that would suggest that suggests otherwise, that women are unclean or menstrual cycles are something we need to be ashamed of?
You know, it's interesting that you would ask this. This is Banned Books Week in the world. And so my book has been silently banned in a way in the educational system, because people don't think that although menstruation is something that affects all of us came from a menstruator, it affects us all, and yet they don't think that it's material that should be talked about in a school setting. And they're not saying, oh no, we're, you know, they're not saying outright, you know, ban this book, it should be shut down, but they are saying this is inappropriate to teach. And you know, it's really interesting, and I've spoken to many, many, many educators. I've spoken to librarians, hundreds of gatekeepers, and they all nod when they're in the audience, and then they understand the importance of a book like mine to be in the world, but they're not going to bring it to their classrooms. And the librarians are bringing it into the libraries, because I think it's more kind of a personal thing. But to put it on a pedagogical platform is difficult. However, and that's for children. However, in the university level, I've gotten a lot of support, and people are talking about it. People are comparing it to Ansaldúa and the post-colonial discourse that she brought up, and how to use spirituality and gender identity and sexuality to reclaim power. And then there are moments, very simple moments, like the time that my sister-in-law gave her book to a family, and they gave it back. They said, we cannot share this book because it's about sex. Book about menstruation is about sex. And so, you know, so the same people that I'm talking to, the librarians and educators, some of them agree and many don't. And so there's this kind of silent censoring of the text.
It speaks to how people are undereducated when we think about this particular subject matter. As you said, you know, in some spaces, especially with young girls, people find it inappropriate to teach. What my interpretation of that was that these young girls are not important enough to educate about their bodies and themselves. That leads me to my next question. How does menstrual or period stigma compromises healthy engagement with one's own body?
You know, that I've known a lot. I've heard a lot of menstruation stories as I've gone around to talk to people about this book. And I've heard stories that are terrifying. Stories where, you know, the moment that a young girl menstruates, her mother slaps her. Another where, you know, she thought she was dying because she was bleeding. This ignorance and this stigma around menstruation and has made us not know, or just something that happens absolutely every month for thousands and millions of people. And what I want to say, I know, the stigma has affected our view of our bodies in a way, in the same way that the forces the stigma has affected our views of our bodies to the point where we don't know. There's an incredible ignorance. Many women don't know what their vulvas look like. They've never seen them. They don't know what it is when they're pregnant or when their pregnancies are failing. I had a friend who had an ectopic pregnancy recently, and she did not know the process of a fallopian tube, gathering the egg from the ovary and putting it into the uterus. She didn't know that process, and that to me is so shocking, you know. But these are reflective of how the stigma has snuffed our ability to explore and to understand our own bodies.
Excellent, well said. For a minute, Ida, can you discuss the intersectionality of menstruation as a neutral bodily function and reproductive justice discourse?
There is no coincidence that the silence and the stigma around menstruation, it comes from patriarchy, and as does the way women are allowed to be autonomous with their bodies in terms of reproduction. I think the same forces that affect one affect the other. And you really can't talk about one without the other. These are our bodies and our functionings. Whether you're of any gender, menstruators of any gender, and as is our right to procreate, and procreation includes and the same, it includes those who menstruate of any gender. Both that force, those forces are damaging, but I think you know, the more that we talk about it, the more we disentangle ourselves and kick away these forces, the more we're able to kind of make these connections ourselves and find that it's a source of resistance equally and not mutually exclusive.
I often, when in the process of researching this particular subject matter and the things, you know, speaking with various people, for me, you know, I started calling this show The Taxation on Women's Bodies. Mm. Folks were asking me why, and I was like, you know, whether we're talking about period stigma and taboos, mm-hmm. whether we're talking about detoxing the box regarding mm-hmm. women's, feminine hygiene products that are associated with, you know, tampons and things, there's a tax that's placed on that, whether in the United States or outside of the United States. For me, it's like, wow, when we think about patriarchy, when we think about reproductive justice, when we think about various intersectionalities regarding women's bodies or being in control of their bodies, for me, it's like there seems to be an invisible tax being applied to women's bodies. Am I alone in that thought, or is there something there, something to that?
No, you're not alone. I think it's completely part of the same oppressive forces that don't want to give women the power that they're due. And when we look at the fight for reproductive justice, when we look at the fight for reproductive justice, when we look at the taxation fight, when we look at the fight to clean up our menstrual products and we look at the fight against destigmatizing menstruation, those are all part of the same conversation of resisting against patriarchy, resisting against puritanical views, resisting against colonialism. All of these are they're all part of the same conversation for sure.
And I also want to say I'm hoping that there are plenty takeaways for the listening community of Hard Knock hearing this conversation. I also want to urge that men, fathers, right, mm-hmm. guardians of young girls also participate in this rites of passage. And I love the use of language because I didn't really put two and two together regarding the rites of passage, and that's exactly what it is. It was, you know, but even in the framing of my mother communicating this to me, that was not how it was presented, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that moving into this womanness, this womanhood, and the responsibility and the growth and what it really means will change the dynamic and remove most or a lot of the fear for young girls moving into the next phase of their life. So again, Ida Salazar, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today here on Hard Knock.
Thank you, Anita.
And if folks want to check out the book, they want to get a copy, how should they go about doing so? And also, how can they follow you online?
Well, you can find the book pretty much anywhere books are sold, and just don't do Amazon. Please, people, support Booklandia, booklandia.com. They are a local distributor of bilingual and Latinx books, and you can always find me in the library. Oakland Public Library has 20 copies.
Excellent. Thank you so much for that.
I woke dead, but I didn't stop living. I woke dead, I'm good at giving. I can't I
talk, don't stop. EMN at it again. Sandman, Dadaman, Chris, Juwan, Cam, yeah. Innovation, stimulating ill conversation. Anything else, just imitation, simulation. Step into the zone, the Bay Area zone. Hard Knock Radio, let's go. Big shout out to Nita and Davey D. Yeah, right, feel me. Yeah. Honing down at Hard Knock Radio.
Hard Knock Radio.
Kind of crazy though. Oakland, stand up.
Stand up.
Ensemble, Big Night Wolves.
Yeah. Kansas City.
Yeah.
Bellevue. Come on, check out.
Why every novice think they hard knock when they ain't going all in and ain't paid the cost of the fee? Hating that they made they beats, trying to eat to the belly from the steel gray beef. Say please, maybe they'll save you a seat at the table with a great bread making a speech. Say some peace to the lovers I neighbor with a please. Maybe some shade on the name in the street. Let's go.
Real Talk Radio.
You are now rocking with the best in the West.
Yes, Coast. Monday through Friday.
Sing it, Chris.
Let's go. Dance
out. Welcome back. Brothers and sisters, comrades, former members of the Black Panther Party, we welcome Sister Charlotte O'Neill, wife and comrade of Brother Captain Pete O'Neill of the Kansas City branch of the Black Panther Party. The O'Neills left the U.S. after the fall of the party and settled in the East African nation of Tanzania, where they established a village where Africans from both countries lived in harmonious purpose. The O'Neills welcomed the brave warrior Geronimo Gijaga Pratt to their community, where the former Black Panther elder lived, married, and breathed his last breath under an African sun. As we all age into our elder days, it's important to remember that the Black Panther Party was mostly a teenage organization of young men and women. Older members were branch captains and other officials, such as deputy ministers of state chapters. But it was fundamentally a youth group. Much of this gets lost in the mists of distant history. And even though much time has passed and lives have taken different paths, I don't know of one man or woman who regrets his or her former membership in the party. Not one. Most people remember those days as a high point in their lives when they served their people, body and soul. They remember the camaraderie between brothers and sisters, and they remember a fierce love for the people. So we all, once again, welcome Sister Charlotte O'Neill, all power to the people, with love, not fear. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal. Thank you. Thank you all.
These commentaries are recorded by Prison Radio.
Hard Knock Radio, East, West, North, South, conectados. Every set, every hood, barrio to barrio. Y'all stand up, stay righteous, speaking to the thugs. One love, we know where y'all at. Brown Buffalo. It's a hard knock life, gotta pay your bills. They want a song about bling, but it ain't real. We speak to the kids and the OGs. Organize, mobilize, be the change you wanna see. 415s bumping Hard Knock Radio. Brown Buffalo, all up in your stereo. And to the youth, live life like it's golden. Go dumb, go hard, but don't forget where you're going. We from the hood, so it's all to the good. Let us know this, what you're feeling is right. Let's get this understood. It's only one reason why we here today. We trying to make real music so the people can relate.
Learning from these hard knocks, slipping in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the poor guy. Learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, ripping to the hard side. Learning from the hard knocks, living in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the poor guy. Learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, ripping to the hard side.
You know what free is? What's free? Free is when nobody else can tell us what to be. Free is when the TV ain't controlling what we see. Told my n***a I need you. Through all the fame, you know I stay true. Pray my n***a stay free. Made a few mistakes, but this ain't where I wanna be. Before I'm jammed by 12, put a 12 on my feet. Told my n***a I need you. Through all the fame, you know I stay true. Pray my n***a stay free. Made a few mistakes, but this ain't where I wanna be. Before I'm jammed by 12, put a 12 on my feet. Told my n***a I need you. Stay up, I know these times ain't true. Real life, yeah. What's free? Fed investigations, heard they plotting like I trapped. 20 million cash, they know I got that off a rap. Maybe it's the Michael Rubens or the Robert Crafts. Or the billionaire from Marcy and the way they got my back. See how I prevailed and that ain't trying to knock me back. Lock me in a cell for all them nights and I won't snack. 250 a show and they still think I'm selling crack. When you bring my name up to the judge, you tell them facts. Tell them how we funding all these kids to go to college. Tell them how we ceasing all these wars, stopping violence. Trying to fix the system in the way that they designed it. I think they want me silenced. Oh, say you can see, I don't feel like I'm free. Locked down in my cell, shackled from ankle to feet. Judge banging that gavel, turned me to slave from a king. Another day in the bin, I gotta hang from a string. Just for popping a willy, my people, mice in the city. From a cell to a chopper, view from the top of the city. You can tell how we rockin' soon as I pop up. We litty poppin' like Bad Boy in 94. Big poppin' and Diddy and counting me out. Like my account ain't busy, that's 5,000,020. Sit up and count to I'm dizzy. Fade of 500,000, 100 round and it's dizzy. As we beefin' and rappin', I might just pop up with Drizzy. Like, what's free? It's when nobody else can tell us what to be. Free is when the TV ain't controlling what we see. Told my n***a I need you. Through all the fame, you know I stay true. Pray my n***a stay free. Made a few mistakes, but this ain't where I wanna be. Before I'm judged by 12, put a 12 on my feet. Told my n***a I need you. Stay up, I know these times ain't true. Real life, what's free?
In the land of the free where the blacks enslave. 3/5 of a man, I believe's the phrase. I'm 50% of Duce and it's dead free, yeah. 100% of Ace of Spades, worth half a B. Rock Nation, half of that, that's my piece. 100% of title to bust it up with my cheese. Smokes my won't ever work together. You run a checker, but they never give you leverage. No red hat, don't Michael and Prince me, yay. They separate you when you got Michael and Prince's DNA. I ain't one of these house you bought. My house like a resort. My house bigger than yours, my spot.
Come on, man.
My route better, of course. We started without food in our mouth. They gave us pork and pig intestines. You discarded that we ingested. We made the project away. You came back, reinvested and gentrified it. Took sense of pride in the high that's free. And them people stole the soul and hit with 360s. I ain't got a billion streams, got $1 billion. Inflated numbers like we told, be happy about this. We was praising Billboard, but we were young. Now I look at Billboard like, is you dumb? To this day, Grandma afraid what I might say. They gonna have to kill me, Grandmama, I'm not their slave. Check out the bazaar, rapping style used by me. The HOV, look at my hair free, carefree. Ain't near free, enjoy your chains. What's your employer name with the hairpiece? I survived a hood, can't no shaitan rob me. My account's so good, I'm practically living tax-free. Factory, that's me. Sold drugs, got away, scot-free. That's a CCE, copy, guilt-free. Steal me, and expect me to not feel away. To this day, USA, y'all kill me. Sucker-free, no shucking me. I don't jive turkey, say happy Thanksgiving. Sound like a murder to me. Smoke-free, all of y'all calling out toll-free. Label rob you for millions, yet you wanna put a hole in me. Sugar-free, season, but I'm salt-free. You lay a hand on hold my shooter, shoot for free. I promise World War III. Send an order through a hand speed. Kill you in 24 hours or shorter, you can't ignore the hand speed. On guard, it's off the head, it's improv, but it's no comedy. Sign I fail, hell nah. Ha 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 ha.
Hard Knock Radio. We're rocking with Picasso.
What?
And Maya.
Who?
And my last name is Susana. Yeah, yeah.
Draco, fully loaded, planning how to rob Jeff Bezos. How much is 1 trillion when converted into pesos? Turn half into Naira, I got family in Lagos. Contemplating on which plans gon' pay most. We want the bacon business and the huevos, the queso, the banknotes. Go by the caseloads, take those. We want the whole motherfucking payroll. Poverty is violence, policy is silence. Robbery is science, as the Carnegies and Heinzes. Everyone's compliant when you market in the tyrant. Imagine trying to live inside the carcass of a giant. The harshness of the climate makes us heartless and defiant. The hardships and the bias, just compartments of the riots. Footsteps echo through the darkness and the quiet. Better have steady hands when you targeting Goliath. Put the bullet in the chamber, spin the barrel, feel the danger. I can't make it any plainer, you gon' pay us for our labor. I don't need no white savior, justifying my behavior. We them animals you made us, better call Brother Nature. Since my granddaddy built it, can I burn every acre, every fern, till it's vapor, till they learn it's the wager. Tell the governor and mayor if my brother is endangered by a major. I'll be swinging like Steven on the Indiana Pacers. Check the laser sight, somebody better pray tonight, but not to that Caucasian Christ. Jesus had dreads, the same pigs that killed Brianna. Put thorns on his head for a public execution. We need retribution. You can call a million cops, but you can't arrest the movement. Got that tech up to Jeff. Welcome to the revolution. To clear any confusion, we here for redistribution. And for everything we suffered, that ain't even restitution. 13 billion a day was looting. Why making minimum wage? We were cooping. He peeing down his leg. That's karma reproducing, cause his workers themselves just to keep his product moving. Facing 2 pandemics, that's beyond. We already being killed, we gon' buck. See, I was taught do for self, being freeze on us. Grab the cash, now let's get that nigga Elon Musk. Looking out the window with the Draco, fully loaded, planning how to rob Jeff Bezos. How much is 1 trillion when converted into pesos? Turn half into Naira, I got family in Lagos. Contemplating on which plans gon' pay most. We want
Hard Knocks. Turn the speakers in your car up. Quality program, turn in for the real talk. Don't stop. EMN at it again. Sandman, Dadaman, Chris Juwan, Cam. Yeah. Innovation, stimulating ill conversation. Anything else, you just imitation. Simulation, step into the zone. The Bay Area zone. Hard Knock Radio, let's go. Big shout out to Nita and Davey D. Yeah, right, feel me. Yeah. Honing down at Hard Knock Radio.
Hard Knock Radio.
Kinda crazy though. Oakland, stand up.
Yeah. Stand up.
Ensemble, Big Night Wolves.
Yeah. Kansas City.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bellevue. Yeah. Come on, check out.
Why every novice think they hard knock when they ain't going all in and ain't paid the cost of the fee? Hating that they made they beats, trying to eat till they ready for the steel gray beef. Say, please, maybe they'll save you a seat at the table with a great bread making his peace. Say, peace to the lovers, our neighbor to please. Make some shade on the name in the street. Because it ain't David G.
Real Talk Radio.
You are now rocking with the best in the West.
West Coast. Monday through Friday.
Sing it, Chris.
East Coast.